Welcome to a special edition of the 155 Election Podcast, the Ward 8 Hamilton City Council by-election. Episode 159. Marlon Pickin, you are running for City Councilor in the Ward 8 by-election. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Joey, thank you so much for having me.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been pretty interested and active in the local grassroots political scene for just over 20 years now, a lifelong resident on the mountain, been involved in multiple different campaigns. I've been trying to focus the past 20 years on learning as much as I could. When I first sort of came back from journalism school in Ottawa, I saw that there were a ton of really amazing mentors out there in the city. And I wanted to take full advantage of that opportunity because I saw no one else doing it.
Why are you running for Ward 8 Councillor and why should we vote for you?
I've been interested in politics since I was a kid. When I was a kid, I kind of thought, well, the problems of the world will be solved by the time I'm an adult, right? So it was a no-go. But clearly, you know, as I got older, I saw that there were some pretty complex issues we were facing in high school, even starting a newspaper. We talked about things like the rise of GMOs and the war in Afghanistan. So some pretty heavy stuff. I've spent these 20 years learning as much as I could. I think now's the time because I feel like there are some decisions being made around the council table that aren't consistent with the values and needs that I'm hearing from folks in Ward 8 and in the community. But also, I'm sort of troubled by some of the degradation of the democratic fundamentals that are happening in this city. Attacks on equity seekers, attacks on folks looking to learn and grow themselves how the democratic process works.
Do you live in Ward 8, yes or no?
No.
What are your thoughts on residency and representation?
I have a lot of thoughts on it, Joey. You know, about a third, ever since the redistribution, I live on just the opposite side of Upper Wellington, just over the border in Ward 7. I ran for public school board trustee in 2010-2014 in Ward 7. After the redistribution of the wards in, I believe, 2019, a third of the new Ward 8 encompasses a big swath of what Ward 7 was. So I have run in a third of Ward 8 before. I think it's not about necessarily where you live, Joey, or where you come from. I think that's not a great argument. I think what matters is the relationships you have, the connections you have to the ward. I graduated from Westmount Secondary. Terry Berry's my home library. I remember being younger and going to the neighbor-to-neighbor bookstore, just kitty corner to us now. I remember Ding Ho on Upper James and going to Big B Comics. I think that, like, I'm fairly entrenched in this community.
What are two of your citywide priorities for Hamilton?
Affordable housing and homelessness, hand in hand. There seems to be a serious lack of public cooperative housing in Hamilton, whether it be starts or supporting pre-existing pieces. Not to say that there isn't some good work happening at the municipal level when it comes to public and affordable housing, but I think that's where the focus of many residents, tying into the affordability crisis. Secondly, road and sidewalk safety, whether it's for other drivers, pedestrians, and frankly, workers.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 8?
Joey, I think we have an amazing opportunity in Ward 8 to intensify our green spaces in the community, whether it's William Connell Park, Buchanan Park, the park around Mohawk or Hillfield. Along the link, there seems to be a lot of open space. I think there's a lack of festival community engagement that's happening. I did go to the Hamilton Nigerian Association's amazing event in July. That was awesome, but what I saw was lawn. And lawn is not productive. Something that just won't escape my mind are the 5,000 fewer students we're going to have at Mohawk College this September. I think you can't take 5,000 people out of a community and not face serious repercussions, whether housing, local businesses, local institutions that are going to be facing 5,000 fewer people accessing this neighborhood. And I'm really interested in being a part of the community moving forward from this huge loss we're facing.
The city of Hamilton is facing a fiscal crisis. According to the city's own financial projections, the city's discretionary reserve is forecast to be down to just $1 in 2027. The city's last fiscal update was in November 2023, so none of us know the current state of city finances. In November 2026, when the new council term begins, decisions will need to be made. What are your thoughts on this coming fiscal cliff, and how do you plan to approach budgeting?
You know, it's line by line, right? I expect to have a lot of reading to do when it comes to budgeting in this city. When you take a look at sort of the pie chart of revenue in this city, you know, predominantly it comes from taxes to homeowners and residents. Even renters face increases. It comes down from their landlords who are facing increased property taxes. What I know is that we can't be cutting off sources of revenue. And frankly, that was the clinch for me getting involved in this campaign. One of the things that really pushed me over the edge and was like, no, now's the time. Frankly, the 20% cut to the developer charge, I think that's lost revenue. And throughout the whole debate that happened, and thank you, Joey, for pushing for the live streams. They've been sort of the background noise of my life for the last 5 months. Nobody seemed to mention during the entire debate, one side or the other, the fact that Hamilton already has some of the very lowest development charges in the province for our municipality. So instead of, as some had said, a potential 4.5% or more increase just from this 20% freebie giveaway, maybe we should be looking at actually doubling the developer charge. Can we look at revenue generation that isn't just squarely impacting regular folks like you and I?
As Ward 8 councillor, you'll have around $2 million per year in discretionary funds to allocate. How do you plan to manage these funds?
I would imagine there will be a slew of community organizations looking for support going forward, and I'm happy to work with those organizations to figure out how to best utilize those funds. I mean, ultimately, it's for the residents of Ward 8. They need to communicate what their priorities are going forward. How it comes into place, you know, I alluded to green spaces and intensifying green spaces in the ward. It's not clear to me 100% yet whether that might be something that the discretionary fund would go towards. But there are a number of very hardworking folks who volunteer looking for support to pull off their events.
You're promising to improve City Hall. I'm feeling exhausted on this topic because I heard every candidate in the 2022 change election promise they were going to make City Hall transparent. If elected, you'll have 1 year inside City Hall before the new council term begins in November 2026. How will you use this year to prepare an action plan on transparency?
That's a really good question. I believe with the 20 years of experience, 10 even serving as the chairperson of an advisory at the city, you get to learn that there are multiple groups sort of pushing and pulling for power and decision making. It's not just the council. You have staff that are an important part of moving things forward. You have the politics of the other councillors. I believe in transparency. I believe, as I just said, I'm a big fan of the fact that we have a city council live stream for our committees and council itself. I think you have to get a lay of the land. You have to be realistic of what you can achieve in 8 to 10 to 12 months before election 2026. I think better understanding the politics, building, making friendships, making alliances with like-minded folks who believe in integrity and democracy is going to be a big part of carrying an electoral agenda forward in 2026 that could focus on integrity.
October 8th, you'll be sworn into office and take your seat in the council horseshoe. On that day, council will vote on zoning reforms, including upzoning Upper James between Link and Rymel, residential zoning reform to permit medium-density missing middle housing along minor and major arterial roadways. The housing crisis will be a literal day one issue for you. How do you plan to approach planning approvals, and how will you use zoning reform to address housing shortages?
Upper James is a really interesting place on the map. It's basically a concrete and asphalt desert, unwalkable, impractical, apart from folks who may live just on one of those side streets. So there's a few parts to this. When it comes to new developments that are happening in this city, there's a very minimal requirement when it comes to affordable housing units. And I feel like even those small amounts have been sort of reneged upon by the market. So for sure, we have to hold these developers to account when it comes to affordable units, but I don't think we can be reliant on the private market to actually build the kind of housing that we need. We just went through a boom. We just went through gentrification in multiple communities. We did not get the housing that regular Hamiltonians need and can afford. So I believe in allowing for construction and constructing up. I think that the municipality itself, it's time to take some leadership when it comes to housing starts, supporting cooperatives that are getting built, those pieces that are actually going to meet the needs of residents. And frankly, if a developer is unable to meet the needs, then why are we proceeding with these builds? Who are we building for? If I could continue on, I would say Upper James, as I suggested earlier, is a bit of a concrete asphalt desert. If we're going to increase density on Upper James, we have to look at how do we make this road more livable. It's a highway. It's a concrete asphalt highway. It's not particularly livable. It's not particularly walkable. It's not particularly enjoyable. I think those things go hand in hand. And I think those sorts of restructuring and redevelopments are not served by a 20% developer discount.
Let's talk about development charges. Mississauga Mayor Carolyn Parrish was elected on June 10th, 2024. She formed a housing task force that first met on July 10th and issued a comprehensive report on January 22nd that included actionable changes to Mississauga policies, processes, and development charges. Mississauga's incentives are tied to municipal affordability and family housing goals designed to maximize return without creating a tax burden for existing residents and are time limited to ensure developers actually built. This proves it's possible for municipal government to act quickly in response to current housing market conditions. Development charge reform will likely be an issue in the 2026 municipal election. What are your thoughts on development charges? What goals, if any, do you have for DC reform, and how will you approach this issue if you're successful in this election?
Joey, anyone who's followed council for the past 4 or 5 months has seen the agenda being dominated, frankly, by developer lobbyists or developer concerns. It's on the table, it's public and for the record. And for the record, developers and their representatives have suggested that the market's bottomed out when it comes to developers investing in our communities, that they were looking for a little bonus, but that there are no guarantees of building. But if they don't get their bonus, it's alluded to that, you know, it's the city that's stopping workers from working in the city. In fact, it's developers that have stopped people working in construction in this city. But we have an opportunity. There is an alternative. It's the public sector. It's the city building its own capital infrastructure, building for the future. I'm not interested in something that meets the needs of an exclusive group of folks. And going back to the fact that, again, we have some of the cheapest developer charges, like, unfortunately, and I don't like to look back too much, I'd like to look forward, but we missed out. How much money have we missed out on as a municipality by having some of the very, very cheapest developer charges in the province to begin with? How much revenue have we lost in the past 10, 15 years during the boom that we could have had, in fact, because demand was so great and so high? They failed us, unfortunately. The private sector and developers have failed us when it comes to the kind of housing that Hamiltonians need. We have to be looking in other directions. And I've seen this conversation alluded to at council, but no one's come right out to say it. There's a little bit of maybe shyness ever since the mini homes kind of fiasco, as it were, to sort of get really assertive when it comes to intervening in housing. I think that if I were to be successful, this needs to come back to the table.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 8. Upper James is by far Hamilton's most dangerous road, with nearly every section significantly more dangerous than average for both motorists and pedestrians. What's your plan to address safety on Upper James? Does your plan include unpopular but necessary changes? And if so, how do you plan to implement them?
I guess first and foremost, I'd say anything that's going to increase safety on Upper James, I would challenge anyone to suggest that they would be an unpopular thing to do. It's a bit of a crisis, quite frankly, in my opinion, the number of people that we're losing on our roads, and I think unnecessarily. Every accident is a preventable thing that happens, whether it's greater health and safety standards we need for our workers, or traffic calming measures. When we're starting to lose people like workers, we're losing people like Maestro Boris Brott on our roads, we're losing cyclists, we're losing too many people. One person is too much, and I think we need to do everything possible. So you're looking at things like traffic calming. Creating a more pedestrian-friendly road, I think, is important. But I think it's also important that we start bringing local businesses into this conversation. I think those folks have been somewhat unrepresented at the table politically, and they're an important part of carrying this transformation, this huge opportunity we have with Upper James forward.
What is your overall plan to address road safety?
So you're looking at traffic calming measures, so it could be a bump out, it could be changed speed limits that are happening on our city streets. You're looking at potentially alternative transportation paths for alternative transport, whether it be bicycles or walkers or rollerbladers, that takes them off the road but gives them some other space to get around. I think ever since the pandemic, drivers have changed. I'm a driver myself, right? A lifelong driver, and learned from my dad. I'd like to think I'm a good driver too. It freaks me out being on the road. You never know when someone's going to pull a stunt or make a mistake, and there are a number of people making mistakes out there. I think if you want genuine systemic change, so to speak, when it comes to the safety of drivers on our roads, let's double down on our investment engaging with students at the school age when it comes to bicycle safety, which is the same exact rules as driving a car. Let's take a look at that. Let's put some investment back into that. Let's hope for a future of better drivers. But right now, let's look at alternative transportation infrastructure, bike lanes that potentially go down an unused alleyway. There's different spaces we have on the mountain that we can use differently. But the traffic calming measures are a right now thing.
Hamilton City Council meetings. Attendance, respect, and focus are all issues. I want to ask you about one specific issue. Councillors leaving, not attending, or not focusing attention on public delegations. What expectation will you set for yourself when it comes to listening to delegations?
I mean, Joey, I guess it depends on the delegation, eh? Some councillors are paying quite a bit more attention to some rather than others. And you can take a look at the live stream that's recorded on YouTube to find out a little bit about that. Delegations, can we come back to it in a sec? The first thing that pops into my mind is the decorum itself. I quite frankly think there are folks behaving at council undecorously. Quite frankly, there's some bullies on council where if they don't get their way, then they're going to raise their voice or get passive aggressive. I don't think that's acceptable. That's not the kind of politics I was brought up with or behavior I was brought up to display to folks. Coming back to attendance and attention to delegations, I mean, for the last 4 or 5 months, I feel like easily half the delegations or half the attention at council has been from developers or on the topic of zoning and housing. I mean, I think that we're not hearing enough from the community at council. You see Environment Hamilton delegating. You're seeing, I believe, some delegation from ACORN around maximum heat tolerance and bylaw reform. I mean, there are folks, you can see councils taking advantage of remotely participating, which is great to see that folks are trying to use different ways to interface to do their work. It's really interesting to see the behaviors of these counselors. It's a little bit inside baseball, Joey, but following it as intently as I have for the past 5+ months, it is very interesting to see how this group of folks operates, depending on the configuration of folks at the table in that given moment. So is the mayor there? You can see there's a total tonal change, whether or not our mayor's there. I think that some folks, you know, I think that they're for the right reasons, and I'm not here to disparage any of the other candidates or any sitting counselor. I do believe, however, that for me, politics is a pretty sacred thing. And you spend 20 years trying to learn, and then you potentially put yourself out there. Some folks, though, I've seen counselors in the past seemingly treating council like it's a first-time opportunity to learn how a committee works. I'm not that person, so if there's a space for me to take a leadership role around that table when it comes to process, I'm happy to share it. I have 20 years experience as whether it be at the Citizen Advisory, whether it be committees of the Hamilton and District Labor Council, various community groups, that sorts of thing.
Ontario's Municipal Act was amended to make mayors more powerful and more accountable as the head of council. How do you believe strong mayor powers have changed the role of councillors, and how do you see yourself effectively achieving your platform in cooperation with the mayor and the 14 other councillors?
I'm told I have a bit of charm, so I feel like I can lobby my co-councillors and the mayor if it's something I believe strongly in. I think the conviction when I believe something comes through in my voice. I believe there's a huge opportunity to build that consensus with the councillors and with the mayor. When it comes to the strong mayor power piece, I don't know if that would affect the sort of tone that's been targeted at the mayor. However, I haven't particularly myself seen anything to make me feel like that mayor or council has behaved inappropriately when it comes to the utilization of that power. Maybe some folks on council, like growing pains, you've got to learn how that dynamic changes, how that legislation changes the dynamic. I'm more concerned about the relationship of our municipality to the province when it comes to the power struggle that's currently underway between the province and municipal levels of government, whether it be city council or the school boards.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
Gee, I think first and foremost, when it comes to city services, it's about communicating what services are available. I remember the city used to put out sort of a rec book of what was available at your local recreation centers. I used to love flipping through that catalog to find out what I could get involved with. I wish that had come back. But when it comes to city services themselves, you know, I'm a big proponent of public transit. HSR DARTS, I know, is in the process of some expansion. And so carrying that through, whether it's to be a service to the folks who utilize the public transit or the drivers themselves, there's infrastructure improvements that these workers deserve. I understand like a bulletproof sort of pneumatic window being installed in some of the newer buses, I believe, or retrofits in some of the olders. Someone with a healthcare background and someone with a loved one in long-term care, I think that our public nursing homes and long-term care facilities could be expanded. We do have this aging population. Ward 8 is nearly a third of the residents are over 55. We need these spaces. These spaces proved themselves during the pandemic as being the safest spaces for our elderly loved ones. I think that we need to expand that capital infrastructure as well.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
In my opinion, the work that's happening in our municipality when it comes to the forest canopy and our urban green spaces is amazing. I would put even more energy behind that because I believe genuinely in our green spaces being a direct contributor to improved opportunities to live. Or how would you say? I think these green spaces would be a very meaningful improvement to the quality of our lives on the mountain. The other piece to that, I think, when I think about green spaces, getting even more serious about air quality in our city, whether it's coming from industrial, commercial, or residential pollution. I applauded the fire ban that happened quite recently in response to the smog that was happening in our city. I work on the escarpment at Jervinski Hospital, and I'm sorry to report that I'd say 9 out of 10 days of the week, or 4 out of 5 days that I'm at work, there's sort of this lint-like blanket of smog on the lower city that I don't doubt still also exists on the mountain, but we're breathing that in, and I think it's pretty gross. There are times where I swear I feel like folks are burning garbage in our residential neighborhoods, and not wood, and so I think we could take a bit of a look at that. Everyone has a role to play, and I understand there's supposed to be some green refitting happening down at the harbor, at Stelco and other businesses. I'd like to take a bit of a deeper look at where that's going and what we're actually doing right now, because I understand we're refining coke that's going to the States to burn cleaner, but we're throwing those toxins into our atmosphere here.
It's August 2026. I'm writing a review of the 4-year council term that's just ending. What 3 words do you hope I'll use to describe your 10 months as a city councillor?
Joey, I would hope if you were to describe me after those 10 months, practical, ethical, and if I'm being indulgent, I'd say visionary.
What experience has most motivated you to seek a seat on Hamilton City Council?
I think it's the dedication to public service. There have been sacrifices I've made in my life to pursue learning in the political sphere. Almost too many when you think about it. It is a life of service. If it came to a specific issue, I really feel like this housing and affordability crisis is the thing that put me over the edge. What put me over the edge is council voting 9-3 in favor of a 20% discount to developers, no strings attached, and a potential 4.5% increase on our taxes. That's unacceptable to me. When we talk about fiscal accountability, that's what I think about.
Thank you. That's the end of the questions. Do you have closing remarks you'd like to share?
Joey, if you have any opportunity to advocate for that rec book that used to go out when we were kids that sort of outlined all the programming that was available at the city, I think that folks still would appreciate to see a printed book of that. I want to thank you again, honestly, for your work that you did advocating in our city for openness and transparency. I think it's a great service having access to those live streams to be able to see the inner workings, and it gives us an opportunity as citizens to actually learn about how the process works. If we don't learn how the process works, how are we supposed to be engaged? It's not an oligarchy. It's not supposed to be. This isn't supposed to be knowledge that's gatekept. It's supposed to be something where your average person should be able to come in off the street and be able to do a good job, a good ethical job, potentially.
Thank you for joining us.